You are listening to the Women's Streaming Talk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Becky Hammond of the San Antonio Silver Stars, and you're listening to Dishin' and Swishin' on WSPR Radio.
The views and opinions expressed on Dishin' and Swishin' by our guests and callers are not necessarily those of the host, WSTR Radio, its management, or advertisers. Programming on Dishin' and Swishin' is for entertainment purposes only.
Hey, everybody. On this Wednesday's Dishin' and Swishin', it's been a while since we gathered some of the best and brightest minds that cover women's basketball, and I figured the resignation of WNBA President Donna Arender was worthy of us getting together some of the writers that have been covering the WNBA and women's basketball to talk a little bit about her term as president of the league, her legacy, and some possible replacements. And I am joined by Nate Parham, Ben York, and Mel Greenberg. I will let each of them, of course, in their own time, tell you where you can find them, as we do each time. Notably that Mel's back in print since the last time we were on. Gentlemen, welcome to the show this week.
Glad to be here.
Thanks.
Ben, you there too?
Oh, yep. Yeah, I think I chimed in when someone else was saying something, so thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, first, let's talk a little bit about what's been going on with you guys before we get into this. Ben, notably, I wanted to congratulate you and also thank you on the recent success of your countdown of the top WNBA players. I seem to be finding you everywhere lately. Where there's WNBA, there's Ben York.
Oh, I appreciate that. I've been taking some flack. I know that Tina Thompson wasn't too happy being number 17 on the list, and I heard from her on Twitter with that. But again, it's not the all-time great. It's just heading into next season. But definitely excited and fortunate and blessed enough to have any opportunity to write, so I appreciate the time.
And Nate's Swish Appeal continues to find more and more and different places to appear and cover, and the college section this year is, you know, far exceeded what it was last year, and it can just continues to get better.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, I think definitely thanks to you and some of the other new writers, I'm really happy with it. I think it's a lot of it is on you guys, though. I learn a lot about women's college basketball just from reading your stuff, and I think it's been a great team effort, and I'm enjoying it. Keep, like Ben, I think just the opportunity to write and people read occasionally is great.
And Mel, you've unretired from print.
No, I just first of all, I'm starting to sound like a broken record. As I kept saying all summer, I didn't leave to mow lawns. Number two, it's nothing that I expected. Consider them guest star appearances on the date that I predicted when I was hearing smoke signals. Of course, along the way, there had been a palace coup from where I used to work after the sale of the place. So the politics changed a little bit in the office also. But I predicted that knowing I wasn't replaced, and as has happened in other situations with some of our other colleagues that have done stuff, the cry for help came. So, you know, so there are certain days, and, you know, it helps pay a medical bill for this, you know, in the winter months in there. So, but as I told everybody, stay on the internet, because that's where you get the extensive stuff. Even if I'm at the same game, you know, doing a little stuff in print, unless they suddenly have room that day.
Well, now let's on to the subject at hand. It was a bit of a surprise to just about everybody, I would say, when Donna Arender announced her resignation this week to form her own independent marketing company. But the thing was, she had said she wanted to be the president of the WNBA for 4 years, and she served as six. So that takes us to where we are today. Now, as the veteran writer covering the women's basketball of this group that we have today, when Donna took over, I don't specifically recall what the atmosphere and environment was like when Val Ackerman resigned. Was there a feeling of optimism when Donna took over, or was there a feeling of Val was bailing on a sinking ship? I've certainly seen both this week.
Yeah, no, I think it was around 06 or 05, kind of hard to go back now on that because I hadn't given a lot of thought coming in. I think it was more a case of change in personality, you know. I mean, we've lost more teams for whatever since Donna was there, which is no mark on her. I mean, just the way life worked out because she's the one that got hit with the economy downturn, you know, in the league. And, you know, with Val, Val had the same thing we kind of talked about in situations. Young kids that keep growing up, you know, and getting to their formative years or a little older, you know, as at least the women state president. And if you look at Val, remember Val got right into the USA basketball mix. What you did have, though, in terms of a face of the public was like a little change in personality. Let me first preface that by saying Val is great. Val is sitting around with us at a table right now, and she may have gotten a little better publicly. You know, it would be great. But when Val would get up there to speak, you know, as a former GM once in New York once said to me, whoever thought we'd use that phrase, anyhow, Thurry Vanilla. When Donnie came in, she was suddenly like the Energizer Bunny, you know, just all over the place. I think one comparison I used early back in the days when the media was invited to All-Star parties is that, you know, in the Val years when you went and Val was there, Val basically stayed in one place or whatever. I was in one area and everybody came around. I mean, I don't mean to imply kiss the ring, but you know what I'm saying. She was in one area and was accessible and people came around and chatted. Val's first term, I think, was the first Mohican Sun All-Star game when we were up there, I think at one of those, you know, Michael Jordan places. And like I said, she was just, you couldn't fit her down. She was just running around all over the place and things like that. And, you know, I know people that were at one of the first ESPN meetings talked about how she was holding quizzes for the marketing people and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, on a change from Val, who was very stately, you suddenly had like this person that was still a kid running around the room. And I think that became infectious to a lot of other people. And, of course, she did have that record of doing great things money-wise in the, you know, down there in the PGA. The TV deals that guy that made Tiger Woods a multimillionaire. So having the TV expertise at that point in time was very important.
Now, one thing that the good and the bad that has come with Donna was the fact that, as you mentioned, the infectious attitude and just constant how to properly say it. She always seemed like everything was positive. You never heard about anything that was negative, and it was always singing the praises of everything that was going on. And then you have heard some criticism from people about your writing, that's how you tend to write, that you look for the positives and things. And I don't consider that a downside. Could you talk a little bit about trying to, in this economy, in this day and age, with all that's going on, talk about how difficult that is to maintain the perpetually positive attitude and to show only the positive. Is it difficult? Is it not difficult?
Well, I think it depends on the type of person that you are. And, you know, I just, like you said, I don't really make apologies for trying to be positive. I know when I covered the NBA, I wasn't as positive, and there's a reason for that. I think that one of the things I loved about Donna and still love is that she is that positive, infectious attitude, and I think that that's exactly what the league needs, because there's been so many criticisms of the league, and people have continually denounced the league and made fun of it, and I think that you know, while some people, like, they just, you know, they don't enjoy that continual optimistic, you know, rainbow unicorn type of everything is okay attitude, I think that for a lot of WNBA fans and followers, it also gave them a little bit of a sense of security, even though that, obviously there have been more franchises that have left under her reign. Again, as Mel said, it's not a knock on Donna, but I think it's exactly what the league needed, and I think that fans, the majority of them, could identify that with that. And you know, it's hard to stay positive if you're a Detroit Shock fan. I mean, what do you do? I mean, I know that a lot of emails I received about fan story submission that I was doing for WNBA.com were, how shall we put this? They were frustrated and angry that of the move to Tulsa. You know, it was their team and dealing with the loss. But I think what Donna did is give everyone a sense of that, you know, gosh, you know, we feel your pain. We understand. We're doing the best we can. We need time. But the things that I loved about her the most is that throughout all of that, she wasn't just saying those things and there weren't any results. You know, we saw growth. We did see growth. We're starting to see some significant growth in attendance and in terms of marketing and coverage. So they weren't empty promises. It just needs time it's going to take some time to fulfill those. And again, with my writing, I get a lot of flack for that I don't cover the negative stuff. And believe me, I've known quite a bit of things that I could cover that I choose not to, because I'd rather focus on the positive, because I think that we're going to need more of that as we head into a kind of a critical juncture of the league in general.
Now, Nate, one of the things that Donna has certainly supported and helped grow, and I give her a lot of credit as opposed to so many of the other sports and some of these other things that are out there that you would certainly know about, is the fact that she has encouraged, supported, and really embraced technology, social media, and the use of the Internet to promote the game. I'd even go as far as saying without her as president, I'm not so sure that a Swish Appeal would exist.
I'm not entirely sure about that. But she's definitely a huge role. I mean, I think in that situation, again, when we talk about Donna Orender, I think the thing that has to be remembered is just the number of corporate connections she had from her life previous, and she happened to have a relationship with the person who runs SB Nation, Jim Benkoff, and, you know, so it was pretty easy for us as SB Nation to kind of, or not, I shouldn't say easy, but, you know, we had an in with which to talk to, and she was open to it, no doubt. And I think, but it's the whole WNBA. I think they are, the WNBA is a league that needs to look for new outlets and take the risk on some social media folks like myself or Ben or anybody else, and, you know, do what you can to kind of publicize the league and get it to more people. And, you know, I think right now, even when you look at just the way the web works, I think it's important not only just to have people with high circulation, but to some extent, like Swish Appeal is not high circulation. But, you know, it's just to have it on Google. You know, so when someone types in WNBA, they have more than an AP story to read. That's kind of important. And, you know, I think they have done that. And they've done some creative marketing things that I think a lot of other major sports leagues don't necessarily need to reach out to. Like the NBA, for example, doesn't necessarily need to reach to social media folks, because they have plenty of outlets. The WNBA doesn't have that, and so they're reached out and, you know, doing things like the jersey sponsorships. You know, I know people disagree with that, but if it keeps the league afloat, if they're still playing basketball, I'm not so sure I care much about what's on the front of their jersey. And when you look at the WNBA finals, you bring in the overseas banking to throw that on the jerseys as well. If that brings in more revenue, it's good for the league. I think Donna has done an amazing job, in my opinion, and just kind of doing some things that a lot of people maybe resist or a lot of other leagues won't do for whatever reason. And that's good. I think for anything bad you can say about her, I think you got to look at those things as things that will help the league long term in terms of its growth.
Well, on that note, since, you know, as we have mentioned, you know, things have certainly had their ups and downs during the tenure of Don Orender as president. A lot of it had to do with the economy, in both positive and negative ways. A lot of it had to do with the just the natural course of growing and contracting in the league. So I'm going to ask all three of you, for each of you, give me one really for a legacy? Give me one positive, one negative that you would think when you think of the time that Don Arender was president. And why don't we'll start with you on this one.
With who? Me?
Ben, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Oh, whoops, okay. Well, I think the most important thing is, in spite of some of the, you know, the franchises that aren't doing well, that have struggled, that have moved, I still get a sense of stability for the league in general. And I know that that's some individuals don't have that sense or don't have that feeling, but what I loved about Donna is the attitude and the upbeat general nature of how she ran a business was infectious. So, and like I said before, but I really think that there's a stability of the league where I know a lot of people are questioning, like, oh, will the WNBA fold? You know, will it do this? And I don't think it is. I don't think that. Obviously, there's always, you never know with how things are going. But I think that there's a sense of stability. If you really look at things and the growth of the league, I really get the sense that it's good that she created some a sense even in the league office for NBA, for fans of basketball in general, that it's not going to go anywhere. Again, I know that not a lot of people, or there are some that share the same sentiment, but I guess if I would have to narrow something down, I would say that a sense of stability moving forward. Now, there's still a lot of work to be done, but I do get that sense. So I guess if there's any sort of negative, I guess it would be the lack of time, because I think if she had a few more years, then we'd really start to see the league get solidified. And I know she was focusing aggressive in expanding in the Bay Area. I know she was looking at expanding, but what I liked about it is that she was selective. She wanted to find the right people to do it so that the franchises could sustain themselves. So I think if there was a negative, it would be the lack of time to really see this through what her vision was.
Mel, how about you?
Well, I mean, legacy-wise, you know, I think we're all on the same page, so there isn't really too much a lot of us could say differently. I think, you know, the stability thing's fine. I mean, hey, I've had people within the league and around when the first couple started to go and things started to move around, and I think we had a couple in Vals. I can't remember time frame, but I'd have to look back where we had some franchise situations. But we certainly had, in Vals' time, some teams moving, like Utah becoming San Antonio. So, the thing is that, like I said, there was a moving forward. You did have the TV deals. The negatives, I mean, there aren't all that many. I mean, if there's anything on a behind-the-scenes criticism I've heard of Don, and actually Val started to make a comeback here, is that, you know, some people from some teams or some teams that aren't around anymore, but we're supporters, would tell me, that when Val came in to visit a franchise or just talk to people, that when they got there behind the, as we used to say in politics years ago, in the smoke-filled rooms, you know, in the caucuses, that she would sit and at least listen what the concerns were and, you know, what the problems were, where Donna still is always that, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay. So some of them just felt that some of their concerns weren't being addressed. And in some cases, their fears did get founded in that the franchise went. But I don't know whether she could have saved any of those situations anyhow individually. I think the one thing, too, in the league as they're moving is you are getting more of the independent owners. And you know, when you're independent, you're more committed to the cause, maybe. I mean, initially, when the league started and all the NBA teams, it was like, you know, it was like the it thing at the time. And then remember, there was the whole let's kill the ABL mantra. So every resource, you know, was thrown in to show that we're the people that have money until that stopped. And So I mean, but you know, for the Moore case, but I mean, but as I said, there were people who said you can get it down to. I mean, Van even at one time when he was still in the league, Van Chancellor said if it gets down to 8, and it's a solid 8, it'll still be okay if you market it right. So where are we at? We're at 12. You know, I know Stern would have liked 16 only because he felt in terms of functionability. 16 is like the perfect number to do things, because at some point you could take your divisions too and go 4 four-team divisions than what they had for you know, for competition. So I mean, so that's it, in, you know, initially.
Nate, what's your thoughts on the subject?
So I already mentioned the jersey sponsorships, and I think that's, I actually think that's pretty huge. I think there are some teams for which that you know, and I just mentioned, just because I'm here, the Storm even took that to, you know, the Bing partnership was pretty big for them overall beyond just the jerseys. I mean, that was a kind of comprehensive partnership there. And I think we have to look at that as a pretty big positive, because it does help some teams at least approach profitability, even if they're, even if we're not clear on what those numbers actually are. But beyond that, I think, you know, the other thing, since I already mentioned the jerseys, the other thing I think is that, you can't take away the fact that under her, I think most of us would agree that the best season ever happened, maybe, 2009. And that finals was amazing. And the fact that people saw that finals on TV is a credit to her. You know, the ratings are going up. And so the combination of quality and visibility, that's for definitely a mark of good leadership at some level, no matter what else you think about her. On the downside, I definitely hear the part about listening. I've heard that as well. You know, I do wonder how people will look at the roster or salary cap type cuts as attached to her or not. That obviously put a strain on some teams. I think most owners were, it sounded as though people were with that because they understood that it was necessary for the league. But I think that was it was pretty important to it was pretty important to sustain the league, but it also means you have less roster spots, a little less depth, and you just will wonder about long term. Do you miss out on developing some younger kind of, you know, middle, quote unquote, middle class players? And I think that's an open question right now. I don't think we can resolve that, but I think there that kind of for some people was a sign of impending doom. And I would disagree. But the other thing is, you know, does the league going forward, maybe this moving to your next question, David, but does the league going forward want to continue marketing aggressively to men? And if so, how? I think that's still an open question. One that I would have, about 2 years ago, said is a great idea, and now I'm kind of like, maybe we should just build the core we have. So I think that will be, you know, when you look at the marketing schemes over the last few years, that caught me, to be fair. Whether or not those were effective, I think will also be an open question to be answered in the future.
I agree. I think all, everything that was said here was outstanding. From my side, the one thing that I thought of that Mel touched on, I thought the most important, most enduring legacy that she will leave is the independent ownership. I think that that's going to be, that was a necessity for the league, and the franchises in general, while it's been difficult on some of the original situations, say for example at Atlanta, first year of ownership, and you know, but the opposite of that is the group in Seattle, the group in, you know, Mohegan Sun, has really taken to the ownership being independent and is really running with it and doing a great job with those circumstances. The one thing that I would really have as a criticism is the way that just some things were handled to the public, to the fans and the public, like the way that franchises folded. For example, in particular, the Comet situation, where people were really under the impression that the team was continuing. Season ticket holders were still being asked for money and all, and then the next day, everything is fine, and then the next day it's gone. You know, and unfortunately, for better or worse, you know, a lot of championships disappeared under her tenure. Most of it, as we said, it was not her fault about the economy. But, you know, the way that things were handled, I don't think was particularly transparent. I do like to, regarding what Nate said about the 11-person roster and the continuance of that and some of the things that go along that line, I like the fact that they've adjusted their business model because I think they were overspending with the extra coaches and things like that, that if you look back even to the NBA, they didn't have a lot of coaches and those extra bench players and such until later on. They had to make modifications. But instead of just coming out, I always felt that it might have been a little bit better to say, our model isn't the best right now, and we need to modify it to fit the times, and this is what we're doing. Instead of just saying that, repeatedly saying, well, because we have less players, the game is better. You know, because those bottom players weren't that good anyway. And I really didn't think that that was the best. But overall, I would say that she certainly did an awful lot of good. And I think that people will and should look at her time as president of the WNBA as a time of growth and a time of success. Maybe prosperity isn't the right word, but it's certainly far from the term would certainly be far from failure, that's for sure. So now as we go forward, wish list for what you would love to see in a president of the WNBA. Now, what's the most important thing that the next president of the WNBA needs to be able to do, in your opinion?
You say me? In some ways, continue where Donna was, the sponsorships, because I think, as my other two colleagues there mentioned, the one thing, remember, is that business begets business. And when you get being involved in some of those other things, as some of these big companies get involved and still make an investment in the WNBA, it encourages maybe the middle-level sponsorships and all. You know, and, you know, certainly if you can't get a big guy, to get a bunch of medium guys, you know, to do the same thing. And if they're sitting there saying, well, if they did that, I guess they're still going to be around for a while. You know, it might be worth a return for me. And then you get, you know, some more places that maybe weren't involved in the past that get involved with the league, depending how they get involved with the league. Be interesting sometime. Sometimes you guys might have better access to talk to ESPN people behind the scenes and just find out, you know, how they're selling it in terms of, because you always hear about games, you know, and how they have to sell the ad space. You know, I know on the college side, I've had a lot of discussion with that, with Carol Stiff, you know, just tell me what goes on at these things sometimes in terms of a response to a certain game that they want to put on. So I think, you know, that's one. And then the person themselves, and, of course, in the reaction I wrote, actually it wasn't much reaction, so it was more analysis, was there is the option of the two-headed monster that you might need somebody that can run day-to-day and then someone to be the prime minister. So that's why you could bring Lisa Leslie in. She may not know much about running the office, but she can go out there and shake hands in public. And that could be very important, too, in drawing people in, you know? I mean, there have been some NBA commissioners where people don't know what the behind-the-scene was, but they knew the name, they knew the face, you know? You had Lawrence O'Donnell as a commissioner, I believe, you know, and certainly showing my age. You know, when you saw him, you thought Kennedy administration and one of the Kennedy mafia and things like that. And so that was worth something. And I think that's why you hear the Condoleezza Rice name come up. Whether that can become reality remains to be seen. But she did say it whimsically at one point. And you notice they did try to court her and keep her at least around in her presence in all their promotional stuff and the award they gave her.
Ben, what about you? What would you like to see in the next commissioner?
Yeah, well, I think Mel kind of hit the nail on the head in my opinion. I think that they need I think they need a name, and I don't know, in, I don't know what that name is. I think they need somebody that everybody knows, not just, people that follow women's basketball and you know, people that have been, you know, familiar with it. I really, you know, as Mel mentioned, and I read it on his blog about, you know, Lisa Leslie, but I also think along with that, as Mel said, you know, sort of an executive director that can oversee some of these things. But I really think that they need a face that people can identify with, that has enough, you know, clout in the community that will be able to get things done, that has a brand or a presence. But I also think that there's some things that can be done internally that, you know, I'd like, obviously, and I know Nate and I have talked about this before, but access to information would be fantastic. You know, easier access to information, just more updated things quicker. And I know that it's the league still in its infancy in essence, but as Mel said, I really think it needs a face or a name, and maybe they do it kind of like a duo. You know, they hire a president and CEO, and then they hire an executive director to get that is more business minded. But I remember when I heard the name Lisa Leslie, I thought it was fantastic, and I know that it's it might not be ideal, but that's why, you know, I'd like someone to bring in and actually have the business sense and run it. And I love the name Angela Taylor. I don't know if you want to get into who our picks would be, but you know, I know that David, you had mentioned that a while ago, and I've gotten a chance to know her a little bit, and she's fantastic. So I think they need someone that people can identify with, that people can rally around, and I think that it needs to inspire hope and make a big splash. So whoever that will be, I don't know, but there's a lot of good candidates out there that I think will do a good job.
I just want to jump in before we go to the next there, because I'm mentioning the Carol Blazkowski situation. I don't know that it could happen now. I also think that even if the league office had a feeling they wouldn't want to, you know, they wouldn't want to be considered as an affront to the New York franchise, just to know how that went down. But to take all you guys back in the day when the league was starting and even before it hit, Carol was the one involved with all the behind-the-scenes stuff for the 96 Olympic team. She worked in the NBA office when they had the, Final Four. It was always one of the WBCA parties, and there really wasn't a lot of media, so that's where all the media went, was wherever the WBCA was. And, she was the one, and there would be an NBA party and things like that. So everybody, when it started, truly expected that it was going to be her. And when it was Val, most of them said, who? Now, I had served on committees with Val, so I knew, and I knew Val's background, and we knew each other. And so when I first heard, it wasn't Blaze, but heard Val, and then knowing Stern and knowing what was going on, I thought, makes sense. And then at that point, I actually thought that, you know, we would have that model, because I thought, you know, Blaze was going to be there alongside her. Then, of course, New York reached into Blaze, and Val really was not happy about that initially, because I think she had the same thought. But then they thought it made sense for New York. And, I know people were unhappy with the personnel things and what happened in later years. But that's who she was, that person back then. So, yeah, again, it's that person. I mentioned Lynette Woodard, and a lot of people, you know, may not know Lynette today. But Lynette has a business background. She worked on Wall Street. And I can tell you that in her going around and playing for the Harlem Globetrotters, that and when she went into the Naismith Hall of Fame, that the people that are the guys crowd would be taken by her wherever she was, because she just had a great personality.
Nate, what would you like to see in your commissioner? And since my next question was going to be to start kicking around some names, why don't you join into that discussion as well, since
Ben
and Mel have already stolen my thunder there.
I think the number one thing that I want to see is, this is going to sound kind of touchy-feely, but is creativity. And I think that comes from two places, in my opinion. I think, one, it might be worth... Well, I understand that the need to have somebody WNBA fans know or someone that's familiar with the general public. But at the same time, I think there is a fallacy of saying that someone is not going to be good because you don't know them, or doubting them because you don't know them. And sometimes the fact that you don't know them has nothing to do with whether or not they're good, or can become good. And I think reaching outside the league, just as they did with Donna Orender, could be valuable, in that if there is someone out there who has a particular level of expertise that matches where the WNBA is at and has the ability to push it forward based on where it is right now, and demonstrate that skill to do it, I think that's important. Number two, and this was in my joking post the other day, which I just put together from conversations with people after this announcement, but yeah, I did mention the Wu-Tang Clan for a reason, and it's because of the grassroots organizing. And I think one thing that I think is important for this league is what I will call the niche league, and I know some people don't like that, is that you have got to get out with people and make this thing grow kind of organically, from the bottom up, from the fan base up. And the model for that right now for me is, again, Seattle-centric, but the Seattle Sounders did an outstanding job marketing this team. I think it's a sports marketing marvel, in my opinion, and how they've grown soccer in the U.S. And I think, in particularly a city that, you know, had some soccer background, so it has a pretty strong youth soccer league, so it had the seeds of being able to be a successful soccer city. But I think there's no doubt right now that it's the best city in the MLS in 2 years. I think that is, you know, and what they did was, I mean, they just went out and reached people. And it was an all-out campaign for months before the team launched. And it was just, you know, they built an identity, they built a culture around this, and they built it so that people would be able to relate to this team. So when I start to think about names, I'm not entirely sure. I do think, you know, you mentioned the Connelly's the right thing with the WNBA, but also, you know, the Pac-10, her name was out there. And if you start to hear a person's name out there repeatedly, there might be some merit to what people are saying. Obviously, the NBA is interested in growing internationally, and this is just kind of total conjecture here. The NBA is interested in growing internationally and growing their international fan base, and, you know, the WNBA players scattered around the world. There's maybe something to be said for the fact that Condoleezza Rice knows something about the world, and how to navigate that kind of terrain. So. That could be valuable. I was talking with someone who is affiliated with the WNBA, or was affiliated with the WNBA the other day, and you know, we did talk about the fact that looking at the MLS as a league that's been you know, not one of the major leagues, but has done a somewhat reasonable job in spots of marketing themselves, is also worthwhile. I think they've done some things well. Like I said, the Sounders, from what I understand, was definitely a franchise job more than a league job. But it is worthwhile to look at that kind of situation and say, is there someone from there that we can draw? And I think the other candidates that I've seen tossed around, and there's been some good names, are after a while you get, you know, anyone is as good as the next one. And I don't know. Obviously, David Stern will get a chance to talk to these people and get a sense of who they are, and far more than I know. And so I'm not going to say I trust David Stern as a Seattle resident. That would be blasphemous. But I also think that he obviously knows how to build a sports league. And I think there's going to have to be some faith in what he can do and his wisdom there.
I have one question about that. There's one thing that does concern me a little bit about David Stern heading this election, and I do believe him to be a phenomenal commissioner, and I love the things that he's done over the years in building the NBA, but that is his number one priority, obviously, is the NBA. And I have to ask the question, how big a priority is he going to place on this, and will he be able to put in the time and necessary due diligence for the people that he does assign to it? If they're out of the NBA office, will they take on give it the respect that it needs to have?
I think that's a great question, especially given the NBA's own struggles right now. I also think, and I was reading back through some old articles today, and this was like 2006, so I want to say New York Times or Washington Post article, and Stern was describing the fact that we have to kind of redefine value when we think about the WNBA. It's not necessarily dollars and cents, because this is a drop in the bucket relative to what the NBA does. but it's about actually expanding their brand. And if you have the thinking being that at this particular time in 2006, the thinking being that if you have this league of women's basketball players and you can attract women to watch the game, you will they'll track trickle into the NBA. Same thing when people go worldwide. If these WNBA players are going worldwide, those fans there will take a little bit more interest in the WNBA and follow that they'll follow the NBA as well and be able to talk about basketball differently. I honestly believe that he might see it that way. He said that over and over again. I don't think people buy it. I think people say it's like just PR spin. I really do think that's that might be some tangential value to the league. I think he takes that seriously as building a new market for basketball worldwide. So I see that point. I grant that point is definitely having validity. I just don't know. It will be if he loses this. I guess if he loses this personally, that's him. You know, it's kind of his baby, and I think you get all every Jim Rome and dude on the air who wants to just hate randomly, pinning this on him and saying what a bad idea it was to begin with, and how no one cares about women's basketball. You can imagine all the other terrible things that people will say. So I think he has personal and professional investment here in this one.
It's a good point. It's a very good point.
Well, let me add. No.
Oh, please.
I was just going to add in there, as much as you said Donna an outsider. Well, she was an outsider, but she was still an insider, and I think she still had interest because she was golf, but she also was basketball. I mean,
sure.
You know, she
sure.
was inside that way. As a matter of fact, to tell you a funny story, I had great access to Val, and again, because we knew each other coming in to begin with, when she got there. And, every summer she would always make sure we just had one time set aside somewhere in the middle of the summer just to go have lunch in New York somewhere. I always look forward to it because it was always some great restaurant that I wouldn't get to otherwise. And, we would sit there in fact, we probably went through more league PR people who were at that luncheon through the years than commissioners and staff. But just go over there, she just kind of wanted to hear what's being said out there and just exchange of things and ideas that might work or not work. I mean, they were fun things. So they had this New York City Basketball Hall of Fame every year. And this was about a month and a half before Donna got the job. And, of course, when Val was leaving, then my concern was, I hope it's somebody that I never heard of. I hope it's not somebody I never heard of or never heard of me. Well, and, again, because of the access and the things you could get. And, and I'm sure the other guys here would feel the same way. At least it would be somebody, and if you don't know him, but at least somebody you think you know that you could hook up with pretty quick. And so the New York City, the Queens College team that went to the national finals and lost to Immaculata. In fact, it was the Queens people invited me up to their induction, and I laughed because I said, "Why invite me? I was on the other side of that. We won." but at the reception and all, and I knew a lot of those people. So at my table, this woman comes and takes a seat and goes, and I didn't recognize the person. She goes, "Mel Greenberg." He said, you still doing all this? And then she went, "Donna Giles." And I went, "Oh." So we sat there. So a couple of weeks later, Annie Myers said, "I think they're looking at Donna Orner." And she just said Giles that night. I remember Donna Giles. And I said, "Well, who's Donna Orner?" She says, "New York, Donna Giles." And I went, "Oh, okay, I approve. I know her." Even to the point that I remember on the initial conference call, because she was in the game that Blaze got the record. She was on the other side of that. And everybody's asking odds and ends. So at that point, I just to be smart, I just said, "Hey, Donnie, you want to tell everybody how you held Blaze at 52 points in the Garden?" And that's where she started saying, "I got switched off defending her at halftime." And things like that. So there might be people in the NCAA and business types and AD level and all that want to take a look at it. And like I said, I did do samplings in my piece Friday for Saturday, on the different types that they're out there. Teresa Grins, people have had mixed feelings of how she was in Illinois, but Teresa was always a business person. Rutgers, you know, I remember there were events where crowds would come, and she basically herself went out and worked the businesses. Because I remember one game, and then she had joked to me on this, joked seriously on the side. I said, pretty good job. And she says, oh, yeah, this was me and Carl. She said, you think the marketing department knows how to do this? So I don't think she'd be all that interested, but that's what you need. You need that person that's just going to be able to come in there with a couple hooks and hook people into this thing. And the other thing, not to sound like because it is part of the negativity, and it's only which is not her fault, and of course you guys hadn't lived it, but obviously I've lived it, is during Donna's time is when we really started to see the big decline in print media. And with the decline of print media, as I've said on these calls, one of the first things the print media has bailed, you know, has been the WNBA, especially if they're not in WNBA cities. I mean, you know, think about this. During the playoffs, the New York Times does a big piece on the legends, and they Donna and Blaze. And then Blaze gets canned. They missed the story, and AP in New York misses the story because Vin was on medical leave at that point, and it happens. At all the natural points that you figure, oh, I will wait to see what's there, and then you suddenly realize you're carrying the ball, and you guys are carrying the ball because they're not carrying the ball. And, you know, not Donna's fault, you know, as it happened, but maybe somebody to at least when they go to the APSE things can keep sports editors interested enough to keep the WNBA in their papers while they're still around.
Okay, now, Lynette Woodard was one of the names that came up that I find very interesting, as is, of course, Condoleezza Rice, and we've talked about some others. Couple other names just to throw out there, just for kicks, see if what you guys think. How about Mike Trangisi, former commissioner of the Big East Conference? Ben, one that I got to ask, that I want to ask you about is, what are the chances of Ann Myers leaving Phoenix and being interested in something like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think she's pretty rooted in Phoenix, but as I've had the fortune of, you know, getting to know her a little bit over the past few years, I think that she believes in women's basketball as a whole so much that it wouldn't surprise me if she didn't leave, if her name was at least under consideration for it. She's ran the organization well. She hires the right people. And you know, I want to clarify something. I hope people understand that just because it's a name we haven't heard of, certainly doesn't mean that I think that they wouldn't do a good job. That's far from it. I just think that to benefit the league, you know, it would be fantastic if they could get the right person that not just women's basketball fans and followers have heard of. And you know, I think Ann is a fantastic choice, and she's great. She's a great interview. She spends time with the fans. I haven't met one person that I've heard a bad thing, anybody say anything bad about her. And again, she knows how to run an organization, and she has a fantastic basketball sense. So,
now, Nate, one of the members of the Seattle ownership group just left. I don't know the circumstances surrounding that departure. Is that a possibility?
You know, I honestly don't either. So I think that was kind of it happened kind of unexpectedly. So I don't know. I was gonna toss in though Karen Bryant as someone who I think has done a good job with the Storm. I have no idea if she'd be interested in taking on a job like president, but I think similar qualities maybe to some of the other people we described, just I think just a very good public presence, very level-headed, has done a good job of, you know, when we talk about the independent ownership, obviously she knows a lot about that. She knows, you know, they help facilitate the Bing thing, obviously. So all the good things we've talked about with the WNBA recently, she has some experience with touching with the Storm. So I think she could certainly be a reasonable candidate. But yeah, Dawn Trudeau, I honestly... I'm not very clear on that situation or what happened.
And we mentioned Angela Taylor, of course. She would be an interesting consideration. I have to wonder, since it's still the commissioner, the president position is still an arm of ownership, and considering things went on with the Mystics, I have to wonder if that would be an antagonistic type of choice and not one that would be highly endorsed.
Yeah.
And
the only thing I would say to that is I don't know how many friends in the home office the subhead of the organization since Leonson says everything impressed with her press conference that day, because I think that's what led to part of a discussion. You know, I mean, if Donna had just left and that press conference announcing the change and that truly hadn't happened, it just might be like when Val left, you know, it's just, all right, it's time to move on to somebody else and things change and whatever. But when you get an owner who everybody thought was showering the league, you know, the league with money on the side beside their own team, and makes a comment that basically was saying we're all going to hell in a handbasket, you know, that everybody then starts doing stories, you know, what's the real fate of the league if we got an owner we thought had a lot of bucks and saying this. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying is if they want Angela, I don't know whether they're going to worry about affronting, Sheila, especially since Leontis is the guy that, you know, basically has his hands on the kitty.
True. True. Now, also, you know, and the other name, of course, that I'll throw out there is I might as well throw out Tamika Catchings, because since she's been now nominated for the U.S. Peace Award, she basically could do everything anyway, so we might as well put her as president of the league, too.
Well, you know, I will tell you also one about Karen. I knew Karen from ABL days. I think if you do the two-headed person, Karen would be excellent to be, you know, can get the best of both worlds to be in there to do the day-to-day, because she knows how to do the day-to-day. Obviously, she's doing the day-to-day in Seattle, and then you would have that person. But I don't know what it'd take, but having met her in Atlanta and friends of mine in Atlanta, Kathy Betty just has enormous respect, and the way they've talked about her to me, they've all said that she came in, and even the Georgia Tech people in our center for the UConn game said that, you know, she basically was a businesswoman down there. She really didn't know the baskets, but they all said she's learning real quick, and so having worked that model, we've talked about David. David will put energy into it. I mean, old people there'll be subgroups and all the people that will bring names to him. And if the resume is really good, he'll talk. But, I mean, he'll make sure it's the right person. It isn't like it's something he has to do. I mean, he will go full metal jacket into it, and he will have a few helpers along the way. And remember, Donna's she's not totally going away. She's still going to be around there, giving her two cents. And Val's still around behind the scene giving her two cents. So, you know, there's enough input. And occasionally somebody might even call us, you know, just as trial balloons on the side, you know, and float names to see what we think the reaction would be. I mean, they'll do what they want, but we may get solicited.
Mm-hmm. I think just one more thing that you mentioned about Kathy Betty, which I think is important from what I've caught from that area, is the connection with the colleges. And apparently she's done a pretty good job with local universities, Georgia Tech in particular, I believe. And Karen Bryan, the Storm, have done some of that here as well, working with the University of Washington. I think that's worth something, you know, when you mentioned also a Big East, former Big East Conference president, commissioner. I think that's important to think about, like how you build that kind of pipeline from high school through college through the pros in terms of building that fan base and kind of building that. I know those fan bases are different. They're different in men's. I know they're not exactly coherent, but it would be interesting to know if there's someone out there who could have some ideas about how to draw on the college fan base to build the WNBA one more explicitly maybe than has been done in the past. I don't know. But I heard it's been done in the past and didn't work, so I don't know.
Actually, let me give you a name I didn't throw in there, and I'm just blanking her last name, but in the Big East office, Dana, who had been at Tennessee and was actually involved with the Atlanta Dream before she took the Big East job up there, she kind of replace Donna up there, you know, when Donna got sick, you know, in terms of the position. So she's probably the, you know, the number one female in the Big East office in terms of the women's basketball operation. And you know how big that is beyond just UConn. I mean, if you took away UConn or reduced them a little bit, if everybody else in that league, it's still a great league. And so it's another name. When I saw it raised, I didn't raise it, but somebody asked me about it, but I certainly said, oh, yeah, well, she'd be a good candidate too.
And I'm going to – and I'll just add one last name to the conjecture before we wrap things up, and I appreciate you guys spending as much time with me as you have it. And that's Marsha Sharp. And I'm not sure if Marsha would be interested in leaving her current position working with the Kayao Cancer Fund. But she is someone that is respected and renowned in women's basketball circles. She knows how to get out there and be the face of an organization, as she's done with the Cancer Fund. And she certainly has a love for the game and knowledge of the game. So I would certainly say that Marsha Sharp would be a person that would merit some serious consideration should she be interested in something like that.
You know what, you know, it mentioned that you open up new doors, because when you mentioned Marsha, and I think, though, she's really committed to that. But a name popped in my head out of Colorado is Seal Barry, because she's that same kind of model that you talked about. I mean, I think she's in there, you know, at the AD level. But she would fit that same shoe that you just talked about.
Well, gentlemen, as we go to wrap things up, as well, the way that I always like to end these roundtable types of things is to give each of you a final opportunity to tell everybody where they could find you online and in print, and give me one independent thought that you would like to leave with today. It does not have to be on the topic. Of course, it can be if you wish. We might as well start with Malva, since we started the whole conversation with you to begin the evening, though.
Well, it's for the most part, we're more focused on the college world and the next big event to come up in a couple weeks. So maybe we ought to talk to each other, three of us on the call, and put it together. You know what, it might be fun, like December 19th, 88 things about women's basketball. Yeah. to go with that number 88 that's coming up in 89. And I have a little fun exchange I'll be popping. I just wait for the moment, because we got some time yet. But I will say that Jim Foster, who will probably be, you know, Ohio State coach, will be the person on the other side of the line at that game. And Harry Perretta, Villanova, who in the streak, there was a new record, but while in terms of the Wooden record, he keeps joking about saving Wooden. And Foster recently told me about an exchange they had last week pertinent to that, which is kind of pretty funny. So, well, this is a main topic, but it was kind of cute with them both being Philly guys, and both of them involved with now the UConn streak being navigated by a Philly guy.
And Mel, give us the website again.
Oh, yeah. Well, right now, we're pretty good. I'm the guy talking about marketing, right, and looking at hits and everything. you know, what's funny, too, is I know there's interest there, because I'm sure you guys might have StatCan or something where you can really look at reports. And I marvel every now and then, it's this time of year when I'm seeing stuff from Europe and over there looking at me. But people say there's probably WNBA players over there that are playing. But at the moment, it's WOM Hoops, WOM, as in Women's Basketball Hoops, .blogspot.com. But I will tell you this, sometime maybe in the next couple of weeks, announcement to come, that domain I bought. In your back pocket, keep MelGreenberg.com, which is easier to remember. Just keep it in mind, but give you a heads up if it's about to become reality. But there's some wonks working on something, and I'll leave it at that right now.
Sounds good. Ben?
Yeah, you can find, I'll just give you the rundown, I guess, Twitter.com/BJ York. I post a lot of stuff there.
weekly at slamonline.com and in Slam Magazine every now and again. Weekly on WNBA.com. We've got some podcasts and some other stuff that we're doing there. And going to be, pretty sure nobody knows this yet, but we'll be doing some stuff for ESPNW.com. So definitely looking forward to that.
Hey, I just want to, it was in my head to bring up but something to pertinent to league and all, because have you guys seen the new NBA apps for iPad? I don't know if you guys have an iPad. You know, I was, you know, became my new companion, but it's, but, you know, I thought the apps that the league did this past summer was a big jump, you know, for the phones and all that they had, but it is sensational, and I would tell you that if they do likewise for the WNBA next summer, it will go a long way because the video and everything else on it is really good. So it's just something else for people to check, because I got to believe they'll do it for the WNBA also.
Sounds good. Nate?
Yeah, so you can find me on the web at all of our stuff at Swish Appeals, www.swishappeal.com. And anything that I do regarding women's sports will probably be linked there. The thing, the independent thought, is actually about going back to college basketball. I think, you know, so I'm new, I think, pretty sure I'm newer than all of you to women's basketball. I've just found it, you know, I did go to games in college. You know, I went to a CAA school, so Keisha Panagero was there, kind of got me hooked while I was in college. But, you know, I just think the development of the game at the college level is absolutely amazing to me. And as someone who kind of took a gap since I was in an undergrad, and now, I saw a player the other day from Boise State, Katie Eichen, and by far one of the best shooter's footworks I've ever seen, male or female. Just amazing ability to navigate space, amazing ability to get open, amazing release. I just think it was just kind of that example of, you know, there are so many solid players. I mean, she's not, like her coach said, she's not going to be a superstar. She's too small. She's like maybe Taylor Lilly's height and maybe not as much range. But just you look at the technique and the skill level, even at the kind of quote-unquote mid-major, low level. She came out of community college, Walla Community College here in Washington. I just thought that was amazing to see. And something that maybe I think a lot of people who don't follow the college game or don't follow women's basketball closely wouldn't expect. You kind of think UConn and Tennessee, and that's it. But I think the game is growing. I hope whoever comes in next to the WNBA can kind of take advantage of that and knows what to do with that in terms of the fan base and just the talent level. I mean, the talent's getting better. And even if the WNBA is not, you know, totally healthy 100%, the quality of women's basketball is improving dramatically. And I think that's worth celebrating. I totally agree with Finn on the positive thing. I think there need to be people who highlight those positives because they're everywhere right now, and college and pro level, and to some extent high school level. So that would be my independent thought for the night.
I'm going to second what Nate said. The quality of play that has been out there thus far that I have seen on all different conferences has been fantastic. And one of the things that I'm become very grateful for in getting involved with this radio show is the fact that there is a lot of time to fill, and there's a lot of people out there. And I've taken it upon myself to talk to not only just some of the bigger coaches like Gino and Gary Blair at A&M and a lot of the coaches that have been so good to me in coming on, but also going out and talking to Renee Sanchez from Division II, Cal State Monterey Bay, and I had a great conversation with Ed Swanson from Sacred Heart University and here in Connecticut that just lost by 50 to Connecticut. And in particular, Dave McGarity, the head coach at West Point, who has so many different things going on there that you can't even begin to understand about the female athletes, student athletes and cadets that he has at his institution. Really, I would suggest that you get out there if you can and go see even the local schools. You don't have to just watch the big ones away for the games on television. Go see the Division II, III, and mid-majors and smaller conferences. It's worth your time, and it's worth the effort of going out and seeing some quality basketball and some quality people. So gentlemen, speaking of quality people, thank you very much for taking the time on an evening where I'm sure you had other things to do to discuss the situation with the leaving, the impending departure of Donna Arender for our listeners. Thanks again for your time, each of you.
Thank you, David.
Thanks again.
Thanks, David.